Welcome to the GBC Sermon Podcast, a weekly podcast from Gamia Baptist Church in Sydney, Australia. I'm Mark Rader, Senior Pastor here at GBC, and I trust that wherever you're listening in from, you'll be encouraged by what you hear. This week, we continue our current sermon series entitled The Topography of Discipleship, Finding Our Way as the Church Today. This is based on the book Discipleship That Fits, and we are exploring five relationships that God uses to mature us as followers of Jesus. This week, Belinda Lakeland helps us think through how we can take some simple steps towards more intentional discipleship relationships in the transparent context, you and a few.
Well, Survey Sunday, that is exciting. I love statistics. Did you know that you can sound 80% smarter just by quoting statistics in conversation? But you have to remember that 75% of statistics are made up on the spot. In all seriousness, I really do love statistics. I actually majored in them at university. For me, maths and science are expressions of worship. As someone has said, it's thinking God's thoughts after him. I love that we live in a world where we don't only just see the beauty, but that we can study it and we can learn from it. And my heart is often filled with wonder and worship when I hear about new things that we're discovering. A couple of weeks ago, the staff got together to brainstorm ideas for expressions of worship that didn't necessarily involve music. And my suggestion was maths and science. You're welcome. So really, this week is my week. We have Survey Sunday today and the National Census on Tuesday. So I just want to add my encouragement to all of you to hang around at the end of the service and fill out the survey. Whether this is your first time here, whether you've only ever been part of the online community, whether you've been around for a long, long time, we really do want to hear from every person. The data that's collected is really helpful to the church leadership team in helping them really understand what is happening here and how we are doing at filling out our purpose of seeing lives changed by Jesus. I'm here as a Plan A consultant for the year, and one of the first things I did was go through your statistics, that 10 years worth of data that Mark has mentioned. So let me share with you something that I observed from your own statistics. 5 years ago, you did the National Church Life Survey. That's a really big survey that you do once every 5 years, so you'll actually be doing it again this year. But one of the questions you were asked in that survey is, what do you want to be the priority of Gamia Baptist Church over the next 12 months? And your number one response was create a sense of community. And your number two response was spiritual growth. So the data is telling us that you're a community that wants to be strategic about these two things, building community, having a sense of community, and spiritual growth. And that's what this series, The Topography of Discipleship, is all about. It's about thinking, well, what sort of communities do we have here at GBC and how do we belong to them and how do they help us grow as disciples? Because the reality is when you belong to a church as large as GBC, your gatherings are going to take different shapes and be in different sizes. And so we've been asking, well, what does a large Sunday public gathering, how does that help us grow as disciples? How do social gatherings or missional communities help us grow as disciples? How do life groups help us grow as disciples? And to answer those questions, we've been using a book called Discipleship That Fits by Bobby Harrington and Alex Absalom. Mark kicked off this series for us by talking about our personal relationship with Jesus, the divine context. And our relationship with Jesus, it is personal, but it's not private. We should be able to share what is happening in our relationship with Jesus with the people around us. Some of the struggles, some of the triumphs, the joys, the way we're seeing prayer answered, maybe even the sins that we're trying to overcome and deal with. But what context do we do that in? Because you can imagine that having everyone march up to the podium on a Sunday morning and share their sins with the public gathering isn't necessarily a helpful way of doing that. Social gatherings probably don't work for that, and a life group may not be the setting for that. So where's the setting where we can really share what's happening for us? Well, it's this transparent context. That's what Mark introduced us to last week. You and a few. A micro community. You and one, two, and three people. And this context is really important. I think this is the secret sauce of discipleship, actually. Because when you ask Christians what has helped you grow as a disciple of Jesus or who has helped you grow, very often Christians name one, two, or three people who's intentionally sowed into their life, who's prayed with them, read the Bible with them, journeyed with them through a hard time, model for them what it looks like to make decisions that show that Jesus is the King in your life. So this context is really important. Last week, Mark spoke to us about why this context matters. My job today is to do the how. How are we going to apply the transparent context here at GBC? Now, we have some options. Some churches have chosen to take a programmatic approach to this. So they've asked everybody to be involved in something like a prayer triplet or a DNA group. If you know what DNA stands for, just go ahead and pop it in the chat. I'll ask Kat in 10 seconds if anyone knows what that means. Now, there's nothing wrong with programs. I've been in churches that do that. So we affectionately called prayer triplet P3. And I'm still in touch with the women that I have been in prayer triplets with for 20 years. It's a really great way to form connections. The DNA group, so that stands for discipleship, nurture, and accountability. Did anyone have a guess at that? No one even guessed. Well, those groups are useful and helpful. But here at GBC, we have decided not to take a programmatic approach to this. But we understand that even just the word program is going to send some of you into the corner shuddering. We don't want you to sort of have to add something into your calendar. But this is really important. So we're hoping, we are asking you to take an organic approach to this context. We're hoping that this will be something that is included in the relationships that you already have. Now, when we look at the Bible for a how, there's no particular verse that says this is how you're going to do your micro communities. But Scripture is clearly filled with loads of principles that help us understand what this might look like. So I could think of verses like love one another, or bear each other's burdens, or where two or three are gathered, Jesus is with them. If you can think of some verses that might relate to how we do this in small communities, then feel free to put that in the chat as well. But the verse that I've chosen for us this morning that I really want to bounce a few ideas off is from Ecclesiastes. I'm going to read for you Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 8 to 12. Sorry, that is great. The sound desk probably panicked then. The verse that I gave them I was going to read is verses 9 to 12. Two are better than one because they have good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. The writer of Ecclesiastes has been surveying life, trying to find meaning. And actually, this book is pretty famous for the saying, meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless. And in the verses that I didn't read to you, the writer of Ecclesiastes turns his attention to a man who has no one to share his happiness with. It's meaningless. But here in these verses, in 9 to 12, the writer of Ecclesiastes finds something with value, something that does help us get through life. And it's relationships. It's relationships with one, two, you and a few. And I love this final picture that the writer leaves us with, this cord of three strands, not being quickly broken. Because that's really what we're hoping will happen organically here at GBC. Then instead of being single strands that are just sort of traveling alongside each other, we'll begin to weave our lives together in a way that has intention and purpose to it. So we're not just writing our own story, but we're writing the stories of those that we interact with and in an intentional way. We want to be able to point each other to Jesus. See, this isn't just about me growing as a disciple or just about you growing as a disciple, but us growing as disciples. We want to be able to look back over our time together and say, wow, this has been good for both of us. This has helped both of us remain faithful to Jesus and grow in our love and devotion for Jesus. So what might that look like? Well, the first thing that we'd like you to do isn't necessarily to start new relationships, but just take stock of who is already in your life. Who is it that your life is already weaving together with? Who do you know who is a Christian? This really could be anyone. Last week, Mark spoke to us about Jonathan and David, brothers-in-law, friends, frenemies, but they sort of came together in a way that was mutually beneficial for both of them. Both of them were turning each other's hearts to the promises of God. But we see this in all sorts of relationships in Scripture. We have Ruth and her mother-in-law, Naomi. The prophet Jeremiah had his workmate, his scribe, Baruch. We had the three mates, Meshach, and Abednego. Sorry, I had to check with the boss right then. Helping each other stand up against the king of Babylon, King Nebuchadnezzar. Then in the New Testament, we have people like Priscilla and Aquila, husband and wife. We have brothers, James and John. We have the women who went to the tomb together, Mary, and Joanna. And maybe you can think of other relationships. If you think that I've missed some, why don't you name some people who came together in Scripture, whose stories were woven together, who helped each other follow the promises of God? So these people that you could have an intentional relationship with could be anyone. You could be related to them, maybe not. You might be dear friends with them. Maybe you're just sort of getting to know each other. Maybe you work with them. Just take stock. Who is in your life who you are naturally intersecting with anyway? They're the people that we'd like you to start thinking about. Could you form an intentional discipling relationship with them? So the next question then is, okay, I can think of some people that this might be a good step to take with. Well, what do I need to do? Well, in a way that's not programmatic, what you would need to do is to start introducing into your time together in a natural way conversations about Jesus. What sort of questions can you begin to ask each other when you catch up that might promote a conversation about how you're going spiritually, about what you're learning about Jesus, what you're seeing in your life? Mark has put into the discipleship resources this week some questions that might help you have these kinds of conversations. But I think the absolute easiest go-to is the question, how can I pray for you? This is an invitational question. This is a listening question. This is a question that allows people to really share what's happening in their lives. And there is something about this question where people just open up. I've seen this with Christian and non-Christian alike. You've just been chatting about the weather or the Olympics, but when you finish by saying, how can I pray for you? Then all of a sudden they want to start sharing with you what's happening in their life. So ask this question, listen well to the answer, take notes if you need to take notes, and pray. And the next time you gather together, follow up. You see, by asking this question and following up and asking this question and following up, now you have some sort of rhythm. Now you have an intentional discipling relationship. When your time together isn't just about fun or catch up or work, but your time together is now about pointing each other to Jesus. As I was thinking through the kinds of skills that we need to be able to have conversations about Jesus, I was thinking of things like, well, listening skills and asking wondering questions and asking questions that help people figure out for themselves what it is that they're trying to do and where they're trying to head. We need skills about being able to share our own story, our own testimony, and to be able to share stories of Jesus, or maybe to be able to read the Bible with someone else. And it just hit me that these are all the same things that I do in my evangelism training. You see, evangelism and discipleship, they're really on the same spectrum. It's all about making disciples. It's that lifelong journey. So the skills that we need to be able to talk to our Christian friends about Jesus are the same skills that we need to be able to talk to our non-Christian friends about Jesus. And so just let me add my encouragement to you again. If you are feeling like conversations about Jesus, even with your Christian friends, is something you can't quite get your mind around, you're more than welcome to sign up for the Plan A training on that principle of sowing seeds in conversation. So that really is as simple as we would like this to be. We want you to be able to weave your life together with someone in an intentional way, in a way where Jesus becomes part of the conversations that you have together. Now, there may just be two barriers to this working well, so I just want to quickly mention them. The first one is that this intentional discipling relationship, it takes vulnerability and it takes trust. And without either of those things, it's really not going to work the way that we would hope that this works. If we come back to this passage in Ecclesiastes, the writer says in verse 10, so two are better than one. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. We fall. We all do. We fall in different ways at different times. We have different struggles and different sin in our life. We have different complexities in our life. But we all fall. And we need to be willing to share with one, two, or three others what's tripping us up, where we're falling over. If you're not willing to share what's really happening in your life, your doubts, your struggles, then this really isn't going to work as an intentional discipling relationship. See, this isn't really so much about other people holding you to account, forcing you to say what's happening in your life, but it's you coming, being willing to give an account of what's happening in your life. It's going to take some vulnerability. And of course, wherever there is vulnerability, there needs to be trust. Because if we are going to open up to someone about what is tripping us up, we need to know that they will be trustworthy with that information, which is one of our values here at GBC. We want to be trustworthy people. And vulnerability and trust go hand in hand. When we're vulnerable, trust is built, and we need trust to be vulnerable. So begin to open up a little bit with your friends. You don't have to go deep straight away, but begin to open up about what is happening in your life. The intentional discipling relationships that I've been in my life, the ones that haven't worked, have been the ones where both vulnerability or trust were lacking. If people aren't willing to open up, then you can go ahead and still be friends and still socialize, but your relationship will always be on that sort of social level. You may need to look for other people who are willing to listen to you be vulnerable and be vulnerable back with you. The other thing that may prevent us from actually having these types of organic relationships is that we might feel like we actually aren't woven together with anyone. You may feel like you actually are a cord on your own. And I understand that. There are different seasons in life and different reasons why we feel like we're not connecting. It could be that we're new. It could be that we're just online. It could be that there's health or illness problems or season of life. It's difficult to feel like you're on your own. And if that's you, if you're just not sure who is already there in your life, can I suggest the starting point for you would be prayer. Pray to God. Ask for that one, two, three people in your life where you can be intentional with, where you can be vulnerable with, where you can build trust with them. And I'm saying this as someone who has prayed this prayer. I've been through those seasons in life where I felt like that cord all on my own. There was one time when I was a stay-at-home mum with three very young boys, and I was missing adult contact. I didn't have that friend in my life that I could sit down with and be real with. And I remember walking through my house one day and just feeling so sad about it. And I sat down at my kitchen table and I prayed, God, please send someone into my life. Well, a week later, my sister called me. She lived as a missionary in Africa, but her and her husband needed to come and spend 9 months in Australia, and she asked if she could live with me, to which I happily said yes. And so that year, I had my sister with me, someone that I could really share life with. I mean, we were living together, so there wasn't hiding anything. But she's a follower of Jesus, and I was so thankful for that time we had together, being able to encourage each other and have that transparent context. But there have been other times in my life as well where I've just needed to pray and ask God to send that one. And He always has. But it's involved me stepping out as well. You see, it's great if an extrovert shows up in your life and adopts you. That's probably the easiest way to make friends. But sometimes we need to put in the effort ourselves. And a great place to start is a slightly larger community, something like a life group. So if you're not in a life group yet, maybe you could join up to one of our life groups here, even one of the temporary ones, one of the lockdown life groups, or if you're in our online community, I'd really encourage you to be part of the online life group. So that's what we're hoping to achieve here at GBC in this transparent context. We're hoping that organically you will be weaving your lives together, that you will be sharing Jesus, and that you will be transparent and trustworthy with each other.
Intentional discipleship relationships may take a programmatic form, but in reality, it can be as simple as adding conversations about faith and following Jesus to a pre-existing relationship. Something as simple as, "How can I be praying for you?" opens the door to build trust, which in turn invites vulnerability. What is your next faithful step as a follower of Jesus this week? What relationship can you invest in to increase its impact as you follow Jesus? Let me remind you that we release the Big Three podcast each Wednesday. The Big Three is a companion podcast to our sermons podcast as we unpack three big questions raised from the message. Matt, Jess, and I will be discussing Belinda's sermon this week, and you may find it a helpful exercise to listen into. You can find the Big Three anywhere you listen to podcasts. Due to the current public health order, our facilities do remain closed to the public. If you'd like to join us for worship this week, you'll need to do so online. Our services are at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, and you can join in by logging into www.gbconline.org.au. Keep an eye on our social media platforms for any changes. Until next time, God bless.